Blog Talk Radio.
No one.
I want to rock with you.
You are now listening to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
The following internet radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
If you are a woman listening to this show tonight, let me ask you a straightforward question. What are your thoughts on both having sex and watching others have sex? When you have sex with your husband, boyfriend, or other designated lover, do you sometimes feel your companion has been watching too much pornography and he is trying to imitate the behavior of the male porn stars he has watched frequently on video? Do you sometimes think he wants you to behave more like a female porn star in bed than the woman you really are? If and when you watch some adult sex videos, i.e. porn, do you often blush at what you see? Do you enjoy what you watch, or do these type of films leave you feeling a wee bit uncomfortable and maybe somewhat prudish? My guest for the evening, who is a self-proclaimed cougar, is a former well-respected advertising executive who noticed that in many of her erotic interactions with younger men, they would many times try to emulate the behavior they saw displayed on many of the hardcore porn films they were exposed to. My guest was not the biggest fan of such behavior, so she decided to seek feedback from men and women about the differences between real sex and pornographic sex. The conclusion of her findings led to a new career as a web entrepreneur and a new website entitled Make Love, Not Porn TV, which solicits videos of real-life couples having real-type sex and without many of the influences of normal hardcore pornography. The site is currently in beta mode and will soon be fully functional. Who is this woman that in 2009 left an indelible impression on the crowd of listeners in her TED presentation and is now a highly sought after real sex educator and public speaker? Her name is Miss Cindy Gallup, and tonight Miss Gallup is going to share with my listening audience all of her thoughts about the notion of real sex as Miss Gallup takes time from her extremely busy schedule in order to get up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh my god, is this Alan Roger Curry of Mode One fame? Oh my god,
you're really good at this.
I gotta ask you, do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and marry someone in a race? You do?
I think they do. I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how did you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect the woman. Never disrespect your woman, but the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do something stupid.
I think it's a turn-on because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo, Mode One. This is Gerard McClendon from Chicago Tonight and the McClendon Report. Right now you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode 1, let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha, Alan Roger Curry.
Gentlemen, to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. We're on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and I'm your host, Alan Roger Curry. And today is Thursday, October 11th. And man, if you live in the United States, there is a serious debate going on right now between the vice presidential candidates, Democrat Joe Biden, who's the current vice president, and the guy who's vying for the office of vice president, Paul Ryan, the Republican. Man, it's been it's been something else. Woo! Today we have a good show. I have a guest who's a major power player in the world of web entrepreneurship, and she gave a presentation at a TED conference about 3 years ago that left some jaws dropped and eyebrows raised. And I cannot wait to talk to her about her notion of real sex versus pornographic sex. Now, first, next week, I'm going to have a woman named Shoya Bowman. Shoya Bowman is one, if you live in the Chicago area, you might be familiar with a group of women that are known as the Six Brown Chicks. The Six Brown Chicks. I've had at least three of them on my show. And the woman I'm going to have next week, she is part of the Six Brown Chicks. Her name is Shoya Bowman. She's going to be here to talk about a stage play that she's written and produced that premieres in Chicago on Saturday, October 27th. So that will be my guest next Thursday. I've been getting a lot of feedback because yours truly was on national TV this week, not talking about Mole One, not talking about my talk radio show, but of all things, I was on national television talking about my love for butter pecan ice cream. That's right, butter pecan ice cream. I was part of a segment on the Steve Harvey Show called Ask Steve, and I told him that I wanted some advice on nutrition and fitness, and I brought up the fact that it's hard for me to resist eating butter pecan ice cream. I love Häagen-Dazs butter pecan ice cream. Love it. Anyway, he brought me on stage, and we sung the butter pecan song. And it's interesting because the Steve Harvey Show has videos on YouTube of their different segments. Do you know that butter pecan segment
a couple of days ago, it had 100 views on YouTube. Now it has just under 12,000 views. So evidently, a lot of people liked Steve and I talking about our love for butter pecan ice cream and the butter pecan song. Yeah, I had a great time on the show. I filmed it about 2.5 weeks ago, and it came on nationwide on Tuesday. And yes, I've been getting a lot of feedback. People, now honestly, I felt funny about being on TV because of all the times I think I've been on television, that's probably the heaviest weight I've ever been on television. And anybody who knows me real well knows I'm like, if you saw The Nutty Professor with Eddie Murphy, you remember that he was Buddy Love in some scenes, and other scenes he was Sherman Klump. That's Alan Roger Curry. When it comes to weight, I am the most fluctuating weight person. Like when I first came back to the Midwest from L.A., I looked like a middleweight boxer. I was lean. I was cut. I was muscular. And then, shoot, less than 2 years later, boy, I was so chubby from eating my late mother's cooking. And every year I probably go up and down. Every year, literally. Every year I go up and down. My weight, rarely have I had a year where my weight stayed exactly the same for 12 consecutive months. My weight always goes up 20 to 30 pounds or goes down 20 to 30 pounds. So that was my only thing I didn't like about the show, is that I just felt like I looked so heavy. But no, the people enjoyed it. Steve Harvey's fans enjoyed it. My fans enjoyed it. I had a good time. I'm going to take a intermission break. And when I get back, hopefully I will have my... Now, look at D.C. David got to start snapping on me. That ain't right. Speaking of David, I got to give love to my chat room. You know, I love all my listeners. But I have special love for my chat room listeners. And number one of those is Diva362636. And she telling me to stop eating my chicken. You know I can't stop eating chicken wings, Diva. You ain't right for saying that. Now, if you said stop eating all that lasagna or stop eating all that pizza or cheeseburgers, then I agree with you. But, man, I can't give up chicken wings. I can't give up peach snapple. Man, they're my two loves. Everybody know I love chicken wings. I love peach snapple. And the third thing I love is probably butter pecan ice cream. But I'm going to have to, I don't know if I would say I'm going to give it up completely, but I'm at least cut back. But yeah, I got Diva362636, Adrian, in my chat room. And she's watching the vice presidential debate intensely. I got to tell Adrian that, you know, my Indiana Hoosiers going to put the smackdown on her Ohio State Buckeyes coming this weekend in college football. You listeners, remember, I predicted the upset first. IU over Ohio State. And I know Diva's like, yeah, when your alarm clock starts working, talk to me when you wake up from your world of delusion. I got Jiggy79 in my chat room. I got Stephen Harper in my chat room. I got Ben3 in my chat room. I got Adam Grieco in my chat room, and I got a few guests in my chat room. I'm going to take an intermission break, and I'll be right back. So don't go anywhere. I will be right back.
Can you feel the tension? You know what's coming up next, don't you? You all know what's coming up next. So, what can I tell you? I'm excited. I'm standing backstage and I'm all jittery. It's the moment we've all been waiting for. What can I tell you? I read this guy's book about 2 years ago, and this is some of the most powerful shit I've read. The guy's mind-blowing. He's got a radio show. He's been all over the place. He's got crazy fans. He's amazing at what he does. He loves helping people as well. This guy will go on for hours and hours, even if it's like one person or 100 people. He doesn't give a shit. He'll stand there and he'll help people and help him and help him and just keep it. And he loves this stuff. He's passionate about it. He changed my life. He's changing everybody's life in the room and thousands of people. And he's amazing. I'm really happy. I consider him one of my mentors. I love the guy. Please go crazy for Alan Roger Curry.
to the Japanese girl on roller skates.
I went up to her. I said, you got a talent for this rollerblading thing. And that was probably the only moment when she was smiling. She was like, yes, I love to rollerblade. I said, well, to be quite frank with you, I didn't give a fuck about rollerblading. I said, your ass looks so juicy in that, what is that, spandex? And she was like, oh, my God, I mean, would you just come to Venice Beach to just look at women's asses? I was like, is that a trick question?
Please visit www.mode1.net for more information on the Direct Approach Dating Summit 2010 DVD. Are you an expert and or book author who offers men and women products and services related to dating and relationships? If you have a new product, a valuable service, or upcoming event or speaking presentation that you would like to advertise on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network that is guaranteed to hit your target demographic audience, then look no further than Blog Talk Radio's number one talk radio podcast program for active dating singles. Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry has had more episodes ranked number one in the category of romance, dating and relationships, love and sex, and overall self-help for singles than any other talk radio podcast program on the entire Blog Talk Radio network since January of 2008. I will help you advertise any product, service, or event that is designed to help men and women improve their love lives, sex lives, and overall social lives. Please write me at Blog Talk Radio Advertising at mode1.net. That's MODEONE.net. Don't wait. Do it now.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
We now return to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. I want to give a shout out to my buddy. I see him in the phone because he's usually here. I don't think I saw him last week, but Irvin V. Pulliam the third, EVP3, match one, and also my other buddy John Suhu, who actually invited me to the Steve Harvey show, and that's how I ended up getting selected for the Ask Steve segment. So yeah, shout outs to my older brother and Ace Confidant, Stephen Curry, Irvin V. Pulliam the third, EVPC. Now his mother makes another thing I love. I was talking about foods I love, man. EVP3, man, his mother, woo, man, she makes a peach cobbler you just want to slap somebody for. I'm talking about, man, she could go online and sell that from the internet. It's so good. Oh, my God, it's so good. But anyway, I want to get to introducing my guest for the evening. My guest was born in the United Kingdom and raised in the country of Brunei on the island of Borneo. And my guest studied English literature at Somerville College at Oxford University. And she later received a Master's of Arts degree in English Language and Literature from Oxford University.
My guest worked as a theater publicist early in her career and a marketing representative before deciding to utilize her talents fully in the very competitive world of advertising. She ended up landing a gig working for the highly respected British advertising agency Bartle, Bogle, and Hegarty. And in 1996, she helped start the Asia-Pacific branch of Bartle, Bogle, and Hegarty. And in 1998, she founded the first U.S. branch of this very agency. In 2003, my guest for the evening won the Advertising Woman of the Year Award from a group called the Advertising Women of New York. But it was in 2009 that my guest left an indelible impression on her audience when she discussed the impact of hardcore pornography on men and women's sexual behavior. Now, one of her major projects, among many, is a website entitled Make Love, Not Porn TV, where she emphasizes more realistic portrayals of men and women's sexuality. So on behalf of the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and Upfront and Straightforward, listeners, give it up for Miss Cindy Gallup.
Thank you, Adam.
How are you this evening, Miss Gallup?
Very well indeed, thank you.
Now, you know what I want to ask you first off is about, you got a fly-ass apartment.
Thank you.
Listeners, if you don't know, Miss Gallup has an apartment that's just so off the chain that it's actually been featured in videos, and I want to say, what, movies and TV series?
Yep.
P. Diddy did a video, and Nelly did a video in her apartment. She has this really just, the only word I can say is that it's just ultra cool looking. And so how much feedback per month do you get about just your apartment?
Well, actually, in this era of, you know, visual social sharing on, you know, Tumblr, Instagram, Pinterest, people very flatteringly, you know, regularly blog and reblog photographs of my apartment, come across it. It was on the Selby, you know, and just express appreciation of it. So a lot, which is nice.
Okay, great. Now, tell me briefly about growing up on the island of Borneo. Is that right? You grew up on the island?
Yeah. Well, I actually grew up in Brunei, which is a very small Muslim state on the large island of Borneo. That's right.
Okay. And how was that experience?
It was a lot more boring than it sounds. it always sounds wildly exotic to people. And actually, Brunei is very small. It's an Orthodox Muslim state. It's very quiet. There's not a lot going on. And I grew up there because basically that's where my parents went to work. So so actually it was pretty tedious.
Mm-hmm. And then you went to college in England. And how long did you stay there before moving to the States?
I went to university in the UK and then worked there for a number of years. I actually worked just before I came to New York for 2 years in Singapore. I was working for an advertising agency, and I went out and helped start up their Asia-Pacific office in Singapore before I moved to New York in 98 to help start up and run the agency's U.S. office.
Now, a lot of people I know, when I was in school, I went to Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana. And I met a lot of young men and women who were interested in advertising, but some of them got intimidated because that's considered, similar to the entertainment industry, that's considered an extremely competitive industry. What attracted you to the advertising industry?
Well, actually, I didn't start out wanting to go into advertising. I went to university at Oxford, and I read English literature there. But Oxford has a very thriving student drama scene. And so I fell madly in love with theatre at Oxford, did a lot of student theatre, wrote, acted, directed plays. And so I decided that all I wanted to do was work in theatre. And so I knew I wasn't good enough to be an actress or a director. But I used to draw a lot when I was younger. And so at Oxford, I got pulled into designing theatre posters for my friends. And from there, I got pulled into selling shows. And I really enjoyed that. So I became a theatre publicity and marketing officer in the UK for several years, until I got heartily sick of working every hour in the week and day and night and earning chicken feed. And just around this time that I was beginning to get very frustrated, part of my job selling theatre was to give talks about theatre. So I gave a talk to a group of women, and after the talk, one of them came up to me and said, "Young lady, you could sell a fridge to an Eskimo." And I thought, right, that's the universe telling me something. It's time to sell out of the establishment, leave theatre and go into advertising. And so I crossed over into advertising and found my theatre marketing skills were very transferable, both because, you know, it was about marketing promotion, but also because advertising is quite a theatrical profession. And it was a very good move to make.
Okay. So you helped found the first branch of your advertising agency in the United States.
That's right, BBH New York.
What a great deal. Okay, now, as you were working in the advertising world, I would assume that you slowly but surely start finding yourself becoming this, I've read where you're a self-proclaimed cougar. When did your interest in men your own age begin to diminish and your interest in men younger than you begin to increase?
Well, it really wasn't like that, Alan. Actually, nothing in my life has ever been planned. It's all been accidental. And so dating younger men happened equally accidentally. So 10 years ago, we were asked, I mean, this is when I was still running BBH New York, we were asked to pitch for an online dating brand. It was a UK-based brand that wanted to enter the American market. And in advertising, when you pitch for a client's business, you have to experience the client's product and the entire competitive landscape. So we all had to online date. And this was 10 years ago when online dating, you know, was still relatively low-key, relatively rare. And none of us ever had. So the rest of my team at the agency all happened to be already married, you know, living with dating people. So they all went online as fake personas. They created identities. I was single anyway, and I thought, well, I have to do this for business reasons. Why don't I do it for real and see what this online dating thing is all about? So I posted my profile. I was completely honest about everything, including my age. I got a lot of responses, which was obviously very good for the ego. But rather to my surprise, because I had absolutely not been envisaging this as a dating strategy, the vast majority of those responses were from younger men. And in fact, most of them were from much younger men. Mm-hmm. And I suddenly realized that I was every young guy's fantasy. I was an attractive older woman, you know, high-flying career. I have never wanted to be married. I've never wanted to have children. I've always known I wasn't a mother. Love other people's. Didn't want it my own. And so, you know, I wasn't looking to settle down. What I wanted to do was have some fun, which at the time, you know, I'd started an ad agency. I was working every hour God gave me. I was traveling huge amounts of time. Fun was severely missing from my life. So there's obviously a bunch of young guys out there going, whoopee. So I thought, well, you know, I haven't identified this as a strategy, but it works for me. And so that's when I began dating younger men.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm curious, because I talk to a lot of women on this show, and a lot of times I'll meet women similar to yourself who say that they're not interested in marriage. And, you know, when you're young, you tend to, at least most men tend to assume women are just automatically, to one degree or another, interested in being married. Why would you say that marriage has never appealed to you?
I've just never seen it as the end goal in the way it's represented in popular culture for women. You know, I am and always have been very focused on my work and my ventures. There are lots of things I want to do. you know, I love men, I love dating. I've just never been a particularly relationship-focused person, and I've just never particularly wanted to be married, and I have to be honest and say that the more I see of my friends who are married in relationships, the happier I am. I'm not in either. I'm about the happiest person I know.
Wow. That's a strong statement. But you know what's funny? I'm in many ways I'm similar to you. I've never been married, and I can't say I've ever been, you know, necessarily against marriage. I think I would have been open to marriage, you know, if the right situation presented itself. But as of to date, I've never been married. But similar to the statement you just made, you know, I have a few people that I'm close to that are married, and I think they have great marriages. But there's probably an equal, if not greater, number of people that have had experiences that made me say to myself, man, I'm glad I never was married.
And you know, I think the thing here, Alan, is, you know, I'm very public about the fact that I date younger men. And I'm public about it deliberately, not because I'm saying, you know, everyone should do what I do, but because to me it's emblematic of a bigger overall point, which is that I believe that everybody should be free to design the relationship model that works for them, which may, by the way, be different at different points in their life versus the very limited number of relationship models that society tells us it's okay for us to operate. So just as, you know, out there are a lot of older women and younger men who'd be very happy dating each other at some point in their life, but feel it is not socially acceptable to do that or might not even ever consider it, equally, there are a lot of people out there who might have been happier not getting married, but that was never presented to them as a lifestyle choice and a path that was socially endorsed and acceptable to take. And so, you know, I'm a great believer in just really being very open about the fact that there are many different ways we can all live our lives. And, you know, you don't have to conform to what's expected of you. And equally, you know, no one should judge anybody else's choice, because different things make different people happy. You know, my parents have been married for 53 years, and they're extremely happy. But, you know, marriage is not a path that I've ever wanted to take.
Mm-hmm. I'm in total agreement of everything you said. And that's what a lot of my discussions actually on this very show center on. I believe that nobody should feel obligated to adhere to the quote-unquote norms of society. Everybody should just do their own thing and what's gratifying to them, as long as it doesn't, you know, impose on anybody else or it's not illegal. Now, let me ask you one thing I've been reading about and I've discussed on this show is the rising popularity of what's known as polyamorous dating, such as swinging, couple swapping. What are your general thoughts on the whole notion of polyamorous dating?
Very much as I've said, you know, there are many different models whereby we can operate relationships in this life, and everyone should feel free to do, you know, whatever works for them. And, you know, again, polyamorous relationships may be a choice that a lot of people could be very happy making, but don't, because they go, whoa, you know, that's weird. If it makes you happy, then by all means.
Mm-hmm. Now, within the first, month or two after you had your TED presentation, what was some of the feedback, the more memorable and notable feedback you received from both men and women? Because that was one hell of a presentation.
Just to contextualize this for your listeners. So, you know, I launched Make Love Not Porn at TED back in 2009. And, you know, Make Love Not Porn was very much a little side venture at the time. You know, I was dating younger men. I'd come across a number of sexual behavioral memes where I'd gone, whoa, I know where that behavior's coming from. And if I'm experiencing this, other people will be too, and I want to do something about it. So So I put up on no money this very basic, very clunky, very minimal website at makelovenotporn.com that posts the myths of hardcore porn and balances them with the reality. So the construct is porn world, real world. This is what happens in the porn world, and this is what really happens in the real world. And the opportunity came up to launch it at TED. And I took a deliberate decision to be very explicit in my TED talk because I knew the audience at the TED conference would not get this issue unless I was very straightforward about it. So, you know, I think it's safe to say that everybody who was at TED 2009 remembers my talk. And actually, both, you know, at TED in the several days of the conference following it and subsequently, just everybody came up to me and said, you know, what you're doing is a wonderful initiative. You know, particularly back then in 2009, people had absolutely not thought about this issue, about the fact that when you combine total freedom of access and ease of access to hardcore porn online with our society's reluctance to talk openly and honestly about sex, that results in porn becoming default sex education in the absence of anything else that people can refer to. And so, you know, Make Love Not Porn was a revelation. My TED talk was a revelation for a lot of people and continues to be up to the present day for the people who come across it. And so, you know, people were saying, you know, and this was men, women, you know, everybody, wow, you know, never thought about that. Now that you've raised it, you're absolutely right, and I'm so glad you're doing something about it. And so, it was a hugely positive response and has been ever since.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, I have to ask you, what was your first exposure to what is known as hardcore porn? What was the first porn film you saw?
So bear in mind that I'm 52, and so, you know, my first exposure to porn was, apart from the usual thing of, you know, people of my generation, which was, you know, other people's dads' Playboy magazines, you know, in the house and the neighbours when you went around there to play, etc. When I was at Oxford, I remember making a special excursion up to London, spent a day in London, and as part of that, going into Soho in London and going to one of those naughty cinemas, movie theatres, and watching, you know, my first, you know, adult hardcore porn movie, which was something these days quaintly nostalgic like The Devil in Miss Jones. I mean, I can't remember what it was. But, you know, that was how you watched porn back in those days. This was back in the 70s. So yeah, it would have been, you know, going to a Soho movie theater to see The Devil and Miss Jones.
Yeah, I remember The Devil and Miss Jones. Now, see, what's interesting is because if you knew a little bit about my history, I have four books out, but my first book called Mode 1, Let the Women Know What You're Really Thinking, was actually, to a large degree, influenced by a porn film. It starred a late adult film actor named John Leslie. And the thing that left an impression on me in that film is that his character in the film was so upfront and straightforwardly honest, which, of course, lends itself to the title of my talk radio show, Upfront and Straightforward. He was so bold, upfront, and straightforwardly honest about his sexual desires, interests, and intentions with women. That I was like, wow. You know, and, you know, my brother and another friend, they're like, oh, man, you know, that's a movie. You know, you couldn't get away with being that straightforward with women in real life. But me being the hard-headed guy I was, and I'm glad I was, you could say I basically emulated his conversational style. And the rest is history, and it led to me forming my own philosophy about interpersonal communication with women called Mode 1. But, yeah, it's funny. To me, porn is so much different now than it was, and I don't mean to necessarily sound like a porn connoisseur, but in the 70s and 80s, most porn I was exposed to, it was like an R-rated movie that just happened to have explicit sex scenes in it. But there was actually, like, you know, characters, a semblance of a storyline. Whereas now, you just have these very short scenes and vignettes where two people just come in the room and start fucking. And it's totally different. So I want to ask you, when I get back from my next intermission, I want to ask you, what are your thoughts on the difference between real life sex and, you know, prototypical porn sex? Listeners, if you have a question for my guest or a comment related to this discussion, the number is 646-478-5710, 478-5710. I'm going to take an intermission break so my guests can get a swig of water, but I will be back in roughly about 4 to 5 minutes, so don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
You're about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the king of verbal seduction. This is the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Diana DeVoe, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Layla Odom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Bella.
And this is Charlie.
And we're dancers from the legendary Score Strip Club in New York City. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist. I'm in love with
a This is Alexandra Kanahakis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist. So I'm getting treated for
my sex disease. This is Nikki Trum, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Ambrosia Cumming, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Brandy L. Davis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
Episodes of the Erotic Conversationalist are available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.mode1.com. All right, I'm going to go with my next caller, area code 310-310. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your question or comment?
I used to date lots of women, both in high school and in college and in medical school, and people used to always ask me, you're not the best-looking guy, you're not the richest guy out there, how are you getting all these women? And essentially, the answer is actually quite simple. It's essentially having the confidence and knowing what you want to do.
Oh, thank you, Master Alan.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, Master Alan.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, sir, Master Alan.
I like that.
Hey, buddy, thank you so much for having me. That is easily the nicest introduction that I've ever had.
Seducing sexy ladies. Here's the deal.
My name's Sasha. Hello. And I like women.
Hey, everybody.
This website has tons of resources to help you guys get that success that you want. It's all there for you. The articles, the videos, my blog with lots of adventures and tips. It's all there for you guys.
Let's make the magic happen.
If you're interested in some more intense training, take one of my boot camps. They are fucking good. I'll be honest with you guys. I'm doing boot camps all around the world, so I might be coming to your city.
I would love to come over there and teach you this stuff, because it's awesome! And you learn how to meet tons of hot girls. If you're in London.
This is the guy. He's going to take good care of you.
He's really present in the moment. He's really good. He's hooked up with tons of girls. Good teacher, and just somebody you want to hang out with and learn from.
Oh, so many names.
It's my first name and my sister.
Okay. Yeah, well, I will see you. Mm.
You will?
Ryan.
We do.
Over the last few years, I've dedicated my life to getting good in a sort of fun and natural way of meeting women in the daytime.
What are you doing, actually, in your free time? What's your goal?
I meet beautiful girls on the streets. You know, chat girls on the street. Sound test, 1, 2, 3, 4, sexy man. Hi, can I get a little fist action? We're filming, I just want a little fist. Just come on, you know you want to fist me right now. Boom shakalaka!
Yeah, check out the bootcamp page if you're interested in that.
I hope you enjoyed it, I hope it's useful to you, so please.
Sasha@sashapway.com. Thanks for coming to the site, and
stop being a fucking, come on, people. She's there in front of you. That's the only indicator of interest you need. She's there, you're there. Go for it.
Please pay a visit to www.sashapua.com.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
We now return to my interview and discussion with Miss Cindy Gallup on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, the most listened to talk radio podcast program on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network in the category of dating and relationships and romance. And the discussion we're having this evening, I have a very distinguished guest by the name of Miss Cindy Gallup. She was a former high-powered advertising executive, but now she is becoming known for a website she started entitled Make Love, Not Porn. Make Love, Not Porn, because she was disappointed in some of the behavior that she saw exhibited from some of her male companions in the past, who she felt like their behavior was representative of emulating that of a male porn star. I want to give a quick shout out to those in the chat room: Adam Greco, Ben 3, Diva 36, 36, a few guests in the house: Jiggy 79, Stan 140574444, and he's in my phone line. I'm gonna bring him in a second, and I got Stephen Harper. Now, Miss Gallup, you mentioned that some of your male companions, I guess, exhibited the behavior. If you don't mind, give me two or three specifics that made you say, oh, he stole that from a porno movie.
Sure. And by the way, Alan, just because I want to make sure that this is very clear for your listeners, Make Love Not Porn is a gender equal proposition. Women, young women, are just as influenced by the impact of porn and sex education as men are. So while, you know, I came to the realization of this issue as a straight woman dating younger men, this is an issue that absolutely also applies to women in reverse as well. So from my perspective, if you go to makelovenotporn.com, there are, you know, 10 screens, 10 web pages, each with a different porn world, real world scenario. Every one of those scenarios I encountered. And so, you know, the sorts of things that we're talking about are, you know, one of my porn world, real world pages, you know, porn world, all men love coming on women's faces, all women love having their faces come on. Real world, actually, you know, some women do, some women don't, some men do, some men don't. Have a chat about it and find out what you both like before one of you decides to do this and the other one isn't too thrilled about it. So, you know, it was a combination of, you know, things that you see happening in porn for purely porn performance reasons. You know, obviously money shots happen in porn because they want to show that the sex is real, and that's how you show that the sex is real. And it's important to say, too, that, you know, I'm extremely selective about whom I date. I only date utterly lovely younger men. And these are behaviors that, you know, overly porn-influenced sexual behavior is driven by the best of all possible motives and not the worst. Because, you know, we all get enormously vulnerable when we get naked. Sexual egos are very fragile. And people find it bizarrely difficult to talk about sex with the people they're actually having it with while they're actually having it. Because you are terrified of hurting the other person's feelings, putting them off you, derailing the entire encounter, potentially derailing the entire relationship. But you really want to please your partner. And you will seize your cues on how to do that from anywhere you can. And if the only cues you have are from porn, then those are the ones you'll take. And, you know, so, you know, what I was encountering was very much about, you know, guys wanting to please me and thinking this was the way to do it.
But ultimately, you're saying you weren't pleased and satisfied.
I guess it's the point that, you know, when I talk about the fact this cuts both ways, you know, I talk to young men who say to me, my girlfriends are putting on a performance. They're doing everything they see in porn, and that gets in the way of a real connection. You know, and the best sex comes from great communication and really finding out what each of you like. And it's particularly important because, you know, in porn, there's a very formulaic approach to the way sex is performed. In real life, in the real world, everybody is different. You know, what everybody likes sexually is different in every individual case. And so great sex is a function of, you know, coming together as two individuals and exploring to see what you each like. And if you apply the formulaic approach of, you know, here's the routine they go through in porn, let's go through this routine, then you're never going to get to how absolutely brilliant great sex can be.
Hmm. Now, you mentioned that women feel, I guess, obligated to perform. One of the criticisms I tend to receive from men is that a lot of men feel like there's too much pressure on them to perform in the bedroom, and women pretty much just have to, you know, lay there and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Do you find that women tell you that they feel under pressure to, quote-unquote, perform in the bedroom?
Absolutely. So again, you know, this cuts both ways. I totally hear, you know, and I hear myself as well, what men are saying to you, because porn actually does a disservice to men in a number of ways. Porn represents sex as being entirely dick-centric. It's all about your dick. It's all about how big it is. It's all about how, you know, how long you can keep it up, how long you keep going. Great sex is about way, way more than that. It's about every part of you. It's about, you know, having a wonderful experience together. And so, you know, men feel anxious and pressured about sex based on what they learn about it from porn. Equally, from a woman's perspective, you know, you are expected to perform, you're expected to give extraordinary blowjobs, you're expected to, you know, to do all these things. And actually, one of the things that I have to explain to people is when I talk about make love not porn, people's minds go immediately to sex acts. You know, porn as default sex education means people doing stuff they see in porn. But actually, the impact of porn as default sex education can be very fundamental and insidious and ingrained in ways that people don't fully understand. So, because 99.9% of all mass-market mainstream porn is made by men for men, the entire raison d'etre, the be-all and end-all of every porn scene is to get the man off. As a result, we have an entire generation of guys and girls growing up believing that the entire be-all and end-all, the entire raison d'etre of sex is to get the man off. And so, you know, women are not taught by porn to expect their own pleasure, you know, ask for their own pleasure, or how to achieve their own pleasure. They are taught it's all about the man. And if he doesn't get off, it's their fault, because they haven't performed as they should. And that's not a good situation for either the man or the woman.
Okay. I'm going to take a call at this point, and I believe this call is from one of my loyal listeners by the name of Stan. Stan, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Mold one, man.
Mold one. What's your question or comment as it relates to this discussion and conversation?
I want to ask her, does she feel, because I feel American women, I feel are using sex, like I said in the chat room, as a weapon. A lot of women are using sex as a weapon. They're not going with their instinct of saying, I meet a beautiful guy, I'm interested in this guy, I want to sleep with him, but I'm not going to sleep with him because I'm scared that I'm going to be called a hoe or any kind of name. I'm not going to be sexually liberated. I'm going to make this guy go through 2,000 tests, and I'm not never going to give him sex because I want to make sure that he's going to love me more than just sex. And I want to ask the caller, why do we have that compared to other countries? If I take Brazil, they don't have that. They enjoy sex a lot more than American women. They don't have that mentality of saying, oh, it seems here we're very, sex has to be done in a certain way. It can't be, we need to enjoy each other. It has to be done, like, the sex has to be done a certain way for women. And another question, I feel a lot of men are using porn because they don't have a lot of sex with women. If men and women were having a lot more sex, there would be a lot of men using less porn and going to those videos. I know a lot of men using porn because they're saying, I'm not getting sex at all. I'm with women. At all.
Well.
So, Stan, I really appreciate both of your questions. And I really empathize because what you're talking about there is absolutely one of the things that I want to try and help change with Make Love Not Porn. So what I explain to people is that Make Love Not Porn is not anti-porn. The issue I'm tackling is not porn. I'm tackling the total lack in our society of an open, healthy dialogue around sex, and therefore also around porn, which would actually enable everybody to lead much happier and healthier sex lives, and also, and by the way, you know, bring a real-world mindset to the viewing of porn, which is essentially artificial entertainment. My entire message to Make Love Not Porn boils down to talk about it. And, you know, the sort of issues you describe are absolutely a function of the fact that, you know, sex is this wonderful thing that we all do, but we never talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sex is simply, it's personality. It's as much part of who we are and how we self-identify and self-express as anything else that we currently, you know, publicly showcase in social media or in our day-to-day lives. And so, you know, if we had a much more healthy and open attitude to sex generally as something that is universal and enormously enjoyable and gives a lot of people pleasure, and that's absolutely fine, then, you know, women wouldn't be so concerned about judgment, and judgments absolutely exist for women in the whole realm of sex in the way that they don't for men, which leads to, you know, a lot of concern and a lot of worry about how they will be perceived if they are seen to be, you know, easy. And equally, you know, you're absolutely right. If we were more open and healthy about sex, there'd be, you know, more people having a great time and absolutely, you know, not finding that the only way they can reach fulfillment and, you know, break through their frustration is through porn.
Because to come back to what you're saying, I feel a lot of women make it sound like when a man or a woman having sex, that the woman is giving basically a gift to the man of having sex with her. And I know a lot of women are coming that like, oh, and I'm looking at that, this is not a gift. I'm giving you pleasure and you're giving me pleasure back. We're both giving pleasure. And I feel that a lot of women need to get back to the saying, if I enjoy sex with this man, he's giving me pleasure, but it goes both ways. This is not a gift. And a lot of women have that discussion that, oh, it's a gift and you're so lucky to have it and things like that. And I'm looking at them, no, it's not. No, it's not.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Stan, because the very unfortunate, you're absolutely right. You know, wonderful sex is a wonderful, entirely mutual experience. Unfortunately, this is an area where there are, you know, tremendous double standards for women versus men. And a way a lot of those double standards manifest is very unfortunately through language. So, you know, for example, you know, one use of language that I think is extremely unfortunate is the way that, and by the way, this is true for both men and women, but it's used much more in a female context. The way we talk about somebody losing their virginity, and so, you know, losing one's virginity is represented as a loss, you know, there's an automatic sort of negative inference about that. Whereas actually, you know, it's about accessing, you know, hopefully, you know, and unfortunately, this is not always true of one's first experience, but, you know, in a really joyful way, a wonderful thing that's going to bring you a lot of pleasure in life in a very normal, healthy, happy way. But there is this vocabulary around it that implies a judgment of sorts. And that operates a lot in the whole area of sex, and it does unfortunately particularly operate for women more than men. And almost to the extent that, you know, women who have, you know, perfectly normal, healthy sexual appetites are made to feel bad about articulating that or feel they have to behave or articulate a certain way. So, you know, one of the things that I would love to see, like you, is a very different vocabulary operating this whole area for both men and women alike.
And one final question and everything. And we have to say that also. There's a lot of women who don't enjoy sex, who doesn't like sex at all. And they're basically a lot of women who don't enjoy sex, doesn't like sex at all, are acting like, how could I say it? They're acting like they don't enjoy sex, they don't want sex, they're acting like, okay, let me go make this guy run and do all this shit. But deep down inside of them, they know they don't enjoy sex. This has been proven in many studies that they don't enjoy it. And instead of being real with themselves and honest with themselves, I do not enjoy that act, and let me tell the truth to a man that I'm not enjoying this act, I don't like sex and everything, so either you like me or not for other reasons. They stay with this guy, and then they say, oh, it's because, oh, the guy wanted me only for sex. Or they come with stupid excuses instead of looking at themselves and saying, what is my responsibility? How come I don't enjoy sex the way I should enjoy it as a woman?
Well, we're talking about a lot of the same societal themes here, because the female sexual experience is different from the male. It's a fact of life that it takes women, obviously, you know, longer to get aroused. It's a lot more difficult to have an orgasm compared to a man's ability to have an orgasm. And also, this is something I deplore, female masturbation is tremendously, you know, frowned upon in many places and areas in a way that makes women feel ashamed to even attempt to masturbate. A lot of women never have, or if they do masturbate, they feel guilty about it. And also, you know, masturbating for a woman, you have to really kind of get used to how to actually give yourself an orgasm in a way that it's a lot easier for a man. So there are very different sexual upbringings and dynamics for women versus men, which mean that, you know, women aren't able to identify what would enable them to enjoy sex as easily as men. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why, by the way, you know, I believe that every woman should own a vibrator and use it regularly. And when you haven't had that opportunity, then it can be, you know, a lot more difficult for women to enjoy sex. And, you know, I go back to my point about great sex is about great communication. When the two of you feel able to communicate openly, and each of you finds out what the other person really enjoys and takes the time to explore that, then you get to a much better place. And I really hope that, you know, we can all change this world into one where that happens a great deal more.
Well, I appreciate what you're saying, Sandy. I hope your campaign, I will support what you're saying. Alan, like usual, you're the man. I am going to buy your book, Alan. I'm going to go get it right now, get my credit card to get it, because I know any book that you do, Alan, will be a good book for me. I am very satisfied with all your books. I bought all your books. I bought all your things that you've done. And to tell you the truth, you've done a miracle with a lot of men. I appreciate what you do. I appreciate your show. Thank you, Alan, and please continue your great show. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dan. I appreciate you, the kudos you give me and those kind words. Thank you so much. One thing I totally agree with you, Cindy, is, and he mentioned my books. One of the things I say, and I think all of my books, and at least two of them, that's one of my criticisms of society, is that we don't talk about fucking enough. And particularly non-marital sex. You know, I think people feel comfortable generally talking about sex within the context of marriage, but when it comes to sex outside the context of marriage, everybody's indulging, but nobody wants to talk about it. And I know me personally, I've gotten criticized. It's like particularly among women, I almost have, you know what I'm saying, you know, you have people who either love you or hate you. That's literally how it is with me, because I'm a guy who will say, like, for example, I remember last summer I went with my cousin to this backyard barbecue, and my main conversation was about fucking. And I'd say probably 2/3 of the women were intrigued by that. They found it very interesting, but you had at least a handful that were critical of it. Like, he doesn't even know us. He's talking about sex. But my attitude is I want to remove the taboo out of sex, you know, because, matter of fact, every sex expert I've had on this show said that most parents do not talk about sex with their kids enough, and their kids end up learning about sex from their peers or, as you would probably say, from porn movies. And, but yeah, let me ask you this, since you're kind of an international woman, how would you compare the sexual mores of the United States? Because I know a lot of Europeans that I've met and conversed with have suggested that they think Americans are very prudish compared to a lot of other countries in the world. What's your take on United States sexuality versus Europe and the rest of the world?
Well, you know, actually, I've had responses to Make Love Not Porn from literally every country in the world. And I can tell you that apart from, you know, a very small number of countries, the Scandinavian countries, you know, Sweden, Norway, Finland are better in this respect. To be perfectly frank, the same issues exist all around the world. In Europe, there are tremendously differing attitudes, you know, particularly in countries that are very sort of Catholic, religiously dominated, countries like Italy and Spain. You know, the issues are the same all around the world, and that's why there needs to be an open and healthy discussion about sex everywhere. And, you know, what I say to parents is you can't begin talking about sex to your kids too early. And I don't mean by that having a big serious conversation about sex, but I mean, you know, literally, you know, the moment your kid asks an innocent question that is to do with anything to do with sex, or, you know, they are, you know, touching themselves or whatever, in a way, it almost doesn't matter what you say, but how you say it is very important. If you react with embarrassment, with anger, you know, make them feel that they've done or said something wrong, that's fatal. You want to make it clear to them that you can have an open conversation about this in a way that opens the channels of communication as they grow up, so that they always feel comfortable talking to you and you feel equally comfortable talking to them about what they should know about sex in the real world. It really, you know, this really starts at home and with, you know, what parents can do with kids' upbringing to give them a really sort of healthy, open attitude towards sex and therefore have the ability to open active channels of communication with their parents about it.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, if you have similar to Stan, a question or comment for my guest, please call in 646-478-5710. 646-478-5710. I'm going to take another intermission break, but when I get back, I'm going to have more conversation with Miss Cindy Gallup about her site and everything related to it. Make love. Before I go to intermission, one thing, Cindy, I do with a lot of my guests, particularly female guests, I told you the name of my first book is called Mode One. And that's kind of become a code word for upfront, straightforwardly honest communication. So since you emphasize the importance of upfront, straightforwardly honest communication, I want you to do my listeners the pleasure of doing what we call the Mode One chant. And that's when you just simply stretch out the O's and go, Mode One.
I'm afraid that I'll need to read your book first before I endorse it anyway whatsoever, Alan.
Really? You have to read my book before you just do the Mode One?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Okay. That's one of my first on this show. But my listeners know I have had at least one or two other people that were reluctant to do the Mode One chat, but I'm gonna play it anyway as we go to intermission break.
Alan Roger Curry.
Your love front, straightforward.
Alan Roger Curry.
I'll be right back in about 3 or 4 minutes. Don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. I will be right back as soon as I find a commercial. Oh, here we go.
Hey, I'm Dangerously, and you may have read my short story Till Death Do Us Part in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavored Two, presented by Zay. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry of Upfront and Straightforward and Mode One fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Mode One.
Do you think that guys, to one degree or another, have to play the role of the bad boy to attract women, or they just need to remain who they are and just, you know, be patient?
No, they need to combine their game. They need to go in with an attitude that I'm going to be a gentleman, but I'm also letting you know that I'm attracted to you. You know, I want to kiss you. I want to hold you. I want to, you know, I want to take you out. I want to date you. You know, if you think I want to get in your pants, you're probably right. But at the same time, I like you. I like you. I want to see you.
You know, there's more single women than married women in the United States.
Oh, really? I didn't know
that. It's only 51%. Yeah.
There's more what?
Okay. There's more single women than married women in the United States right now. First time ever in history.
Hi,
mindset is correct. Somewhere there's a woman that's balanced, that's God-focused, that, you know, she gives because she wants to give, not because she's trying to hook somebody with her giving, but she values herself. She recognizes her good qualities, acknowledges her bad qualities, and this is the person that's balanced and ready to be in a healthy relationship.
Just so the listeners know, there's a letter in my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny. It's called Finding Your Swagger. In fact, it's so funny. I just got a letter from a young brother that he read my book, and it's changed his life. And he also put it in, he said, and you know what? I found my swagger, and now all the girls like me like you said they would. I was so tickled by that, yeah.
Oh, man, you got to love it. Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
We now return to my interview and discussion with Miss Cindy Gallup on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, the most listened to talk radio podcast program in the category of romance and dating relationships on the Blog Talk Radio Network. The discussion and conversation tonight centers on a website, new website called Make Love, Not Porn, and it was created by a web entrepreneur and former high-powered advertising executive by the name of Miss Cindy Gallup, who's been my guest for the evening. Real quick shout out to, in the chat room, Ben 3, Deltrick Robertson, a number of guests, Jiggy 79, Susie Hadassas, Stephen Harper. Thank you for being around. Again, if you have a question or a comment for Miss Gallup, the number is 646-478-5710. Got about another 8-9 minutes or so remaining in the interview. Now you know I'm going to have to send you now a complimentary copy of Mo 1 since you refused to do my Mo 1 chant, Cindy. See, you don't know, but see, among my listeners, that's considered blasphemous not to
Sorry,
do the
guys.
Mo 1
Obviously,
chant.
I should have read the book beforehand, but I promise I will afterwards.
Okay. We were talking about, you were making some comments about the conversation that people need to have about sex. Now, I had mentioned, like, you know, parents with their children, but what about, this is a conversation that's debated a lot, both in my personal conversations as well as on this show. Let's say you met a man at a social event, and you guys got to talking for an hour or two, and he started telling you stuff about his sexual desires and preferences and whatnot. Would you feel like that's in line, or would you feel like he should wait to the second or third conversation before he talks about sex?
Well, actually, I think it's not so much talking about sex. It's about what particular topics within that. So I think talking about sex is fine. You just want to get a good sense of the person you're talking to and what they are and aren't comfortable with. And by the way, that simply applies to sex as much as applies to any other topic. You know, you always want to get a feel for your audience and, as you're getting to know somebody and talking to them, what they are and aren't okay talking about. But the reason I mention that is because when you said, you know, talk about sexual desires and preferences. Now, you know, when I am engaging in online dating and I'm having conversations with people, you know, on the phone or on email before the first time we've met, quite often, some of the younger men I date or who are attempting to date me will begin asking things like, you know, so what do you like in bed? And I very politely decline to answer that question. And the reason I decline to answer it is not because, you know, I think it's out of bounds, but because I don't believe in delineating sexual preferences in isolation of the person that you have sex with. Because sexuality is fluid, and what we don't want to do with one person, we may well want to do with another. What we think we like and don't like may change over the course of our lives and our sexual lives. And so, you know, just as I said earlier, you know, great sex is not about applying a formula, whether it's generated in porn or anywhere else. Great sex is also not about going, well, I like this and I don't like that, and that stays fixed regardless of the person I have sex with. So, you know, I would never pronounce on sexual preferences or bring them up in an early stage conversation because, you know, if you and that person ultimately have sexual chemistry, you end up dating, you end up having sex, you could have a wonderful time together finding out that you love all these things you didn't realize you loved because that person is so great and you're so great together. So that's my view on that particular aspect of conversation.
Hmm. Well, I have mixed feelings on what you just said. I kind of half agree and half disagree. I do believe, based on my experiences, that I've enjoyed something sexually with women that I didn't necessarily say enjoy with another woman. And I've had female partners that enjoy things with me, such as, for example, giving a blowjob that they either had never done before with another guy or they did with another guy and they didn't enjoy it. As far as that being the basis for not wanting to talk about it, though, like you start off saying that basically you shouldn't talk about sex until you get a feel. For me, that's how I get a feel for who I'm talking to, is by talking about sex and their reaction to it. And so if I start talking about sex with a woman and I see that she's having, you know, frown faces or prudish reactions, then that lets me know a lot about her, as opposed to someone who's more open and more receptive. It's like I always use the analogy of Dave Chappelle, comedian. He was asked about his comedy when he was being interviewed on Inside the Actor's Studio with James Lipton. And James Lipton said, a lot of people find your comedy hilarious, but he said a lot of people find it, you know, offensive and over the top and insulting. Well, how do you perceive your comedy? What, do you think your comedy crosses the line at times? And Dave Chappelle paused, and he said, well, first of all, I have to know where the line is before I know whether or not I crossed it. And that's generally how I feel about sexually provocative conversations with women. You know, I've had some women, because I'm kind of known, you can say my MO is, I will talk to a woman for the first time within the first 5-10 minutes. I'll talk about something related to fucking. And as you can anticipate, I get a mixed reaction. Some women, they like it, love it, at minimum, don't mind it. Then I have other women who have an adverse reaction to that. They'll say stuff like, you're not supposed to talk about sex with somebody that you just met. And I'm like, why not? And
well,
they'll act like, I'm supposed to know I'm not supposed to do that. But I'm like, I don't know where your line is.
Yeah, well, I guess what I'd say to that, Alan, is that you know, that would be a truer judgment of somebody if sex was something that we all discussed openly and honestly like anything else. You know, I mean, in the way that one might say, you know, well, I like people who really like sort of, you know, eating out at interesting restaurants, and if I talk about Vietnamese food and somebody goes, oh, you know, I only like steak, then, you know, I get a sense of how adventurous they are. The difficulty is that, you know, as we've been discussing on this show, society has hedged sex around with so many, you know, puritanical attitudes. You know, how you feel about talking about sex openly is very much a function of your upbringing, your religious upbringing, your personal experience. And so, you know, I would just say that someone's willingness or not to talk about sex the first time you meet them and in a conversation generally is going to be a product of all sorts of socio-cultural dynamics that are not necessarily a true judge of that person's attitude to sex or how they might operate in the bedroom. That's just my own personal take on that.
Okay. Okay. Well, let me ask you to share with my listeners, how would they find out more about you, find out more about your site and what it's about, and plug any events you might have coming up to my listening audience?
Well, I guess I'd say, you know, I'd love your listeners to sign up for makelovenotporn.tv. And I should explain that the reason I'm saying sign up for is because we took makelovenotporn.tv live just 8 weeks ago, so it's very new. And it's my response to the, you know, amazing reaction that makelovenotporn.com generated, which made me feel a responsibility to take Make Love Not Porn forwards in a way that would make it much more far-reaching, helpful, and effective. I'm a great believer in communication through demonstration. And so with makelovenotporn.tv, I am simply taking all the dynamics that exist out there in social media currently and applying them to the one area that no other social media network or platform has gone or will ever go, which is sex. In line with everything we've talked about tonight, I'd like to socialize sex. I would like to make real-world sex socially acceptable and therefore as socially shareable as anything else we currently share about ourselves on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, Instagram. And so makelovenotporn.tv is a crowdsourced, user-generated platform that invites anybody to upload videos of themselves having real-world sex. What we mean by real-world sex is simply, you know, not performing for the camera, but simply recording what goes on in the real world. If you go to makelovenotporn.tv and click on how this works, you can read about that in detail. We have a very simple business model at the heart of makelovenotporn.tv. You pay $5 to view any video. You can view it as many times as you like over a three-week period. It's a rental model. And then 50% of that revenue goes to the people who created the video. So it's a revenue-sharing business model. And as I say, we're very new, and so we've released makelovenotporn.tv in invitation-only beta. So what that means is you sign up, and we invite you in. And we're doing that because we're inviting in people in phased batches, and that allows us to address all the hiccups and glitches that inevitably occur when a platform is very new, as our users report them, so we can create a better experience for the next batch of people we invite in. We currently have over 77,000 people signed up on our beta waiting list. People are joining. They are renting videos, which is great, and they're watching each video an average of 2 to 3 times, and we're getting a lot of great feedback about how much people are enjoying watching, you know, real-world sex, which really is, you know, real people having the kind of sex they have in real life as opposed to replicating the kind of things that they might have watched in porn. And so I'd love your listeners to sign up and be part of our community.
Well, I already signed up, and I guess I'll patiently wait for my invitation or the next step. And but, yes, I've enjoyed the conversation, and continued success to you. And who knows, in the future I might have to have you back after you read Mo one, just if no other reason, just so you can say Mo.
I've enormously enjoyed the conversation too, and thank you very much for inviting me onto your show. And I'll see if I can fast track that beta invite for you.
Oh, okay. I appreciate that. Miss Cindy Gallup, folks. Miss Cindy Gallup. Next week, I will have Miss Shoya Bowman on my show. Until then, have a safe and enjoyable weekend, and I will be back next Thursday, and I'll talk to you then.